Welcome. It's been a very eventful week at Metro. Some of us were in this room just yesterday for some very exciting action that we're going to talk about a little bit later on the agenda, but we'll start with our introductions. I'm Sushila Jayapal, Multnomah County Commissioner for District 2, North and Northeast Portland.
Teresa Kohlhoff, Lake Oswego.
Kathy Heisey, City of Milwaukee.
Christine Lewis, Metro Council, District 2.
Don Trotter, Clackamas Fire, representing Special Districts in Clackamas County.
Pete Truax, Mayor, City of Forest Grove, representing other cities in Washington County.
Juan Carlos Gonzalez, Metro Council, District 4.
Ed Gronke, citizen for Clackamas County.
Janine Rusted, Tualatin Hills Park and Rec, alternate for Washington County Special Districts.
Gordon Hubbies with Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, Special Districts in Washington County.
Linda Glover, Mayor Pro Tem, City of Vancouver, Washington.
Dick Stout on the Washington County Board of Commissioners representing the ABC District, Aloha, Beaverton, and Cooper Mountain.
Sam Chase, Metro Council.
Rachel Lyle Smith, City of Oregon City, representing the second largest city in Clackamas County.
Melissa Gertler, Metro Staff.
And we're going to the back, starting with Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Ryan, with County Commissioner, City of Ojai.
And Commissioner Schrader.
Commissioner Schrader, Clackamas County.
And Mark.
Mark Watson, Hillsborough School Board, representing school boards in the metro area.
Great. Well, again, welcome. One quick order of business before we go into the public communications. We're going to have a new method of disseminating information for this committee. It's pretty exciting. I see a sample of it in front of Commissioner Lewis, Councilor Lewis over there. But in order to better support Metro sustainability goals, we're going to be moving away from paper meeting materials. And I see some applause. That's great. We're starting off well. We're going to move to a tablet reader that we're all going to be provided with. Christine, ooh. You want to model the tablet reader?
Ooh. Tablet.
I believe Mayor Pete has one as well.
The other Mayor Pete, okay? Let's not go overboard, all right?
So we will have electronic meeting packets. They're piloting the project right now and collecting feedback, and we'll have more information as the rollout continues. That's pretty exciting. Great. Yeah. Yeah, excellent. Any public communications on agenda items? All right. Council update.
Great, thank you. It's my turn to give our update from Metro Council. We have a big update, but that's actually an agenda item 6.2, so I will skip over that. And then with apologies to the chair, we have confirmed Marisa Madrigal as Metro's next chief operating officer. As many of you know, Marisa is currently the COO at Multnomah County. Before that, she was interim chair of the county commission, and she grew up in Washington. She went to high school in Ridgefield and has done work in Clark County. I believe one of her first jobs was running a parks campaign in Clark County. She has a degree in zoology from the University of Washington and a master's from the Naval Postgraduate School. We're excited to bring her aboard, and her start date is March 9th. And that day can't come soon enough. We're so excited to have her join us here at Metro.
Go Huskies.
So I feel, on behalf of Multnomah County, I have to say that we are bitter.
We know.
Good job.
I said apologies. I mean, with a smile, right?
Yes, you have made an outstanding decision. It's going to be great. We're excited for you. We have a quorum, so can I have a motion on the consent to approve the consent agenda, please?
So moved.
Mayor Truax.
Second.
Commissioner Scouten. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And the consent agenda is approved. So for our first discussion item, the regional barometer. As you recall,
Madam Chair,
yes.
Could I make one brief comment about, add one thing to the agenda or announcements from Forest Grove and from Washington County? We lost another counselor in Forest Grove with the death of Ron Thompson on Lincoln's birthday. Ron served the city of Forest Grove as a counselor from his election in 2002 and subsequent re-elections every 4 years until 2018. He had just been re-elected that year and was well into his second year of service when he died, as I said, on Lincoln's birthday. Ron served the city well. He served the region well. He worked with Washington County Veterans Commission and Authority. He worked with Ride Connection on GroveLink and other Ride Connection duties because he was on the board of directors for Ride Connection. Also worked at Forest Grove Senior Center, working with the seniors and with those with disabilities and with veterans, trying to find them homeless services and all of those things that I'm sure we will talk about later on tonight. We will be interviewing and appointing a replacement for Ron, somebody to sit in his chair because nobody can actually replace him. So we will do that hopefully by the end of April. Since the end of June, we have had one meeting with a full council. And when you're doing the things you do in a city council, it is sometimes as small as the city of Forest Grove might be, at only 25,000, we still have a great deal of activity and a great deal of things to do. And missing one of our leaders makes things even more difficult for those citizens who volunteer and get elected to serve as leaders. So Ron exemplified all of that, and he exemplifies the work that you electeds do around the room. I realize this is a volunteer job for most of us in the state of Oregon, and we do it because of a sense of service. And now we do it in Forest Grove in memory of and in honor of Ron Thompson. Thank you for allowing me to interrupt.
Thank you, Mayor Truax. Sounds like an exceptional public servant. I appreciate that. I think I actually skipped over the agenda item that gives each of us a time to make any announcements. Any other committee announcements? All right. Agenda item 6.1, the regional barometer. As you recall, Metro has long been the provider of regional land use and transportation data to inform long-term planning decisions. Metro's Research Center has explored different avenues for providing broader sets of data related to our region. You may remember the Metro Pulse project from a few years ago. Taking feedback from that exploration, the Research Center and Metro's COO office have partnered to develop the regional barometer to show metrics relevant to the six desired outcomes adopted by the Metro Council in 2008: vibrant communities, economic competitiveness, safe and reliable transportation, leadership on climate change, clean air and water, and equity. Today, Metro staff are requesting you gain an understanding of the depth and breadth of this site, take an opportunity to ask questions, and share the site with others that would find the regional barometer a valuable resource in doing their jobs. With that, I'd like to introduce, and I apologize if I'm going to mispronounce your name. Jeff, would you say it for me so I don't mispronounce it?
Furkanja.
Thank you.
Furkanja. You can just call me Jeff.
Jeff. Thank you. Research Center Director and Carrie Stacey, Organizational Performance Improvement Manager.
Thank you all, MPAC members, Madam Chair. I really appreciate your taking the time to hear us out tonight. I'm really delighted to be able to introduce the briefing to you on this product. As mentioned in the introductory remarks, this is something that Metro Council asked us to undertake a while ago, so it's been a labor of love and effort. And we really envision this as being both a communications tool and an open data platform. You've heard Metro councilors and the Metro president talk about a metro as a data hub and about open data initiatives. So this is our first really sort of big step beyond the data that we provide to all of you and aggregate for regional purposes in that direction. So the purpose really is to improve decision making at Metro through increased accountability and transparency so that we're actually measuring real world results in the region on the six desired outcomes, the things that Metro Council and other people really care about. And the other main purpose, frankly, is to help the work that you folks do. Mayor Truax just gave a very eloquent discussion of the public service value and how much it takes in terms of effort and care to do that. And I hope that you will see this tool as helpful to your organizations in doing the important work that you do. So as I think most of you know, I think I last saw you during the Urban Growth Boundary decision a couple of years back. A part of my department's mission for the region and for Metro is to provide reliable and up-to-date data. And so with this new site, I want to point out a couple things that Carrie will in a minute go into in more detail. Everyone will be able to download the underlying data and use it for their own purposes. We're going to be refreshing the data as the source stuff matures and turns over. That will vary depending on the data source and the actual measure that you're about to see. But that's something we are committed to doing on an ongoing basis. In terms of who the audiences are, I like to say that really the audience is everyone in the region, people who live here, folks like you who are the decision makers, and our community organizations and community partners who are doing great work in conjunction with Metro and on many topics. So it's really sized, as again the demo is going to show you, for a bunch of different engagements, short, medium, and then really getting into the depth of the data. Very briefly, I want to talk about the project process. The Research Center is developing and maintaining the tool in terms of the systems, data, software, and we'll sustain it over the long term. It was very important to us to have some guiding principles as we launched into this, and one of the things that I was very insistent on is that the tool be useful, so I hope you find it so. And of course, as implied by its purposes, we want it to have consistent data that is available and refreshed over time so we can start to see a time history of how we're doing on some of these important aspects of what's actually happening in the region. To make it work, we enforced what we call the selectivity principle, which is that we have to choose very carefully. I know that some of your cities have looked at these types of systems before. You can sort of crumble under the piling on effect, so we've tried to choose very carefully what you're about to see. And, of course, those principles are really getting to the fact that our overall goal here is to really serve the public and thereby build trust by being transparent about the types of data we use to do our own work. So I think of this as kind of the show the work principle. If Metro is using this information to make a decision, then we should just expose it to the region. Carrie is a very capable project manager. She led a team that consulted with a bunch of subject matter experts inside the building, outside the building, some of them in your organizations and CBOs, state agencies. They talked about data, they talked about methods, they talked about what was most important, what folks needed, and Carrie will get into those really fun things in a minute. I want to just talk a little bit about the long-term future of data in the region. I mentioned before that Metro councilors and our president are talking about Metro's role as a data hub and things like open data. This is one tool in a kit that we're going to have to build to really realize that vision in the long term. And so I think you all know that we're very grateful to the data that you folks generate in your organizations. We have to evolve all of that regionally into the 21st century and beyond. So my staff engage with your staff in venues like the Arliss Partnership and the Photo Consortium Partnership. We're going to be having more strategic discussions over the course of time as we really try to be efficient and help each other. So look for those coming down the pike. And I just, again, want to thank all the contributions that you folks make to the region as well. With that, I'll turn it over to Carrie Stacey. As I already mentioned, she's an excellent project manager. She's led this phase of the effort, and she is the organizational performance manager in our COO's office here. Carrie?
Thank you. Thanks for having us here today. I want to give you a few more points about the project and then show you a little bit of the site. The first point I want to make is about the scope of the project. So the six desired outcomes adopted by the Metro Council includes, they're broad, some of them are broader than others, one of which is vibrant communities. And we made the decision to present data that goes beyond Metro's direct influence or scope. So we also worked with state agencies, so we are providing data around food, education, health, recreation, in the understanding that if a member of the public were to go to this looking at community information, they would be expecting to see more than transportation, land use, and some parks information. So with that, I want to emphasize that the website does not make a case for specific policies. It really is about making the data accessible. And I will repeat what Jeff had to say, which is all the data that underlies the measures in these on this site is available for download and analysis for your own purposes. So if you want to see something narrower in scope geographically, you should be able to do that from the data on this site. With the measures and graphs that are on the site, we do include some narrative context to give some explanation for why there may be a trend in the data that the average user may not understand. So one example is vehicle miles traveled dips in 2007, and we note that that is due to the recession. We also made an extra effort to provide contextual data around racial disparities and racial inequities that are related to the measures that show information by race. So with that, there are those five topic areas: transportation, economy, environment, climate, and communities. There are measures specific to race and racial equity in those five areas, and then all those measures are pulled into the equity part of the site. So you can see all of them at once if you go into equity, but they're also represented in the other five areas of the site. This is phase one of the site. It will go public on March 31st, and it really is about getting the data up there. It doesn't yet measure progress, so we are going to design a process to engage with you and our community organizations to set targets, set benchmarks, and be able to come up with a way of saying we're doing well in this area and we're not doing well and we want to make progress. So that is something we'll be working with council on, and then that will inform the next revision of the site. So my key takeaway for you is this should be a resource for you and your staff and as well as our community partners. So I'd ask that you spread the word to folks about this new resource, which will be available March 31st. And before I jump into the site tour, I'll see if there are any questions about the project.
I'm sorry, you said March 1st or 31st?
March
31st. 31st.
Yeah. Please, not March 1st.
Right.
So that's a caveat. So there's still some placeholder text. What you're seeing is still a site in progress that's not yet publicly available. Any questions? Okay. So I'm going to go over to this table and then give you the tour. Okay, so there are 127 measures on the site, and 300 data sets inform those measures. This is the landing page. So you'll see the six topic areas. You can search for actual data sets, and then for anyone wanting to navigate the site, there is a list of all the measures as represented in the packet that you have. So folks can take a look at all the different measures and hyperlink to the ones they'd like to see. So I'll start with transportation. The way that the site is built is there are topic areas and subtopics within those areas. So the topic areas relate to the six desired outcomes. You have a definition of transportation, and then you have three subtopic areas of safety, reliability, mobility, and access. And if you scroll down, you'll be able to access contemporaneous reports specific to the topic. I'll go into mobility and access. So this is where we have information around daily miles driven, share of households with access to frequent transit. This is very high level, kind of at-a-glance information at the top of each subtopic page. If you click on the details box, it gives you the source of the data, the geographic area that the data represents, as well as the time period. As you scroll down, you get more in-depth information, whether it's a bar chart or a graph, line graph or a map. So vehicle miles traveled per capita, this is where I mentioned that we refer to the recession that shows a slight dip in vehicle miles traveled, and then you have total vehicle miles driven. You can float over it to get the actual data points, and this is mobile friendly, so this should be accessible from your phone or tablet. Commutes driving alone to work,
And again, we have the source data on the left-hand side for these more in-depth graphs. Here's percent of workers not driving alone to work and the mode that they take. And again, you can float over it to see the actual data point. This is a little more of a complex graph that shows the rise in population in conjunction with an actual proportionate decrease in transit ridership. You got bus and max represented there, and then a similar graph for Lyft and West. Access to transit from households and jobs, so this shows the proportion of those. This is all from our RTP. This is where folks can click to get the data, so if they do hit that arrow, this is where you get the TriMet data, and then our equity focus areas, which are represented in our maps, and I will show you some examples of that, but those are available for download. Advancing our understanding, this is on, I believe, every subtopic page. This is where we acknowledge, specific to the information that you just saw, where the limitations of the data are. So some topic areas have more data than others, and we just want to make a note of that to be transparent. And then the definitions for members of the public who may not be familiar with what vehicle miles traveled might connote. And again, scrolling down further, more specific contemporaneous reports. So I'm going to show you a little bit of each topic area. That was transportation. I don't have time to go into all of them. So economy, this drop-down shows that we've got three: job activity, economic justice and inclusion, and developability and market activity. I'll show you two of those. So developability and market activity. Oh, why isn't that going away? So building permits issued in the region, census tract property value per acre, again, high-level data, and then we get into maps. I don't want to make that go away. Okay. So maps. Here is an example of a map, industrial and commercial square footage. I've already preloaded it. So you have a description of what that means, about industrial areas in the region needing good access to freight facilities, et cetera, and what the what it means to have industrial and commercial square footage. This is the legend. So it shows you that the proportion of the circle is proportionate to the square footage. And then the equity focus areas, as adopted in the RTP, are in most of these maps. And in this particular map, it's represented as a blue polygon. The difference between the equity focus areas in the RTP and on this site is that we have enabled disaggregation so that instead of having all people of color, limited English proficiency, and low-income communities rolled into one, you can turn off the umbrella equity focus areas and look specifically at how people of color may live in proximity to these sites. You can also turn on major arterials, and then you can click on census tracts for specific data on industrial and commercial square footage, and I believe in this map, maybe not. No, I think it's just the census tract information. And then you can zoom in if you wish. A little bit more about this subtopic. You've got property value in Greater Portland, similar map with equity focus areas, permit activity. And then the other section I want to show you in economy is the economic justice and inclusion, which shows information about income and employment. So medium household income, regional unemployment rate. And then this is our change in median annual household income in 2017 dollars for two time periods, 2008 to 2012 and 2013 to 2017. And again, you can float over for the exact data point. And then additional income disparities by race and ethnicity. So this information is from the U.S. Census. Again, you can float over for the data point. And then a small business profile of women and minority-owned businesses. All the information in the economies part of the site, it also includes, well, almost all of it includes Clark County because we want to align with our economic value atlas, which is linked from the topic page, just to be consistent. So now I'll jump to environment. We are renaming ecosystems to be environment, and there's three subtopic areas for that: air quality, built environment, and healthy water and ecosystems. I'll show you the air quality subtopic page. So on this page, you have at-a-glance information about unhealthy air quality, as well as asthma hospitalization, which can serve as a proxy for air quality. We have a chart showing unhealthy air quality. You have your most unhealthy days are designated in red, and as you can see, they are increasing over recent years. Particulate matter under safe levels. Ozone in all three counties. The darkest is very unhealthy. So if you remember that, I can click through those very quickly. Washington County has the highest proportion of very unhealthy ozone. And then diesel particulate matter. This is another map I preloaded for you. So again, this has our equity focus areas, and as well as major arterials. So you can mix and match which of those communities you'd like to see and in what proximity they are. We have also some information about ASRA rates and National Air Toxic Assessment Respiratory Hazard Index. And then our last graph on this page is heating fuels, with the red being the least healthy heating fuel bed in terms of what it puts into the atmosphere. All right, I'll go into climate quickly. So climate, we have climate mitigation, which is climate smart, and climate adaptation, which is the impact on communities. So in climate smart, you have information about vehicle miles traveled, non-single occupancy vehicle commutes. And then climate adaptation, this is where we see the risks to the communities in our region as a result of climate change. You have heat islands. There was an article in the paper not too long ago about a PSU professor showing how urban heat islands are in communities of color are disproportionately affected by those. And then this is a map that our research center put together, which combines the heat island risk with flood risk. And again, you can see how equity focus areas are affected by that. Canopy cover in the region, and then carbon sinks. All right. So I'll go into communities. I'll just show you what this topic page looks like because there are a number of subtopics. So we have housing, health, land use, education, food, and recreation and community engagement. I'll show you housing really quickly. There's actually a map that I want to show to you. We have homelessness rate for 10,000 population, change in population by race. So this is probably one of our more complex maps. This shows where the increase and decrease of different communities of color have occurred over time. We've marked those that are statistically significant with this black outline of the polygon. And with this map, you can actually look at specific communities of color. So I could turn off the overall people of color population change and look at how black and African American population has changed over time. Again, the black line shows statistically significant changes. And if you go into the legend, you can see that the purple is where the population has increased and the red is where it has decreased. One thing I neglected to mention in my talking points at the main table is that we will be linking to contextual stories on the Metro website to give more information. We don't have a lot of room on the regional barometer to explain what the red section of this particular map means. I'm working with our communication staff where we can do more storytelling about what it means for redlining and displacement in neighborhoods, as well as other more complex topics that can't be easily addressed with data. And then going back to housing, we also have housing cost burden by race. So you have the legend of race here, and then you can look at it over time, and again, float for the actual data point. And then a similar graph, home ownership by race, and then median home prices compared to the country, national rate, median rents, housing affordability, U.S. in all three counties, and then an inventory of public affordable units, housing units. So I pulled this map up for you. This shows there are four different types of affordable housing units. The regulated units are shown in proportion by size, and you can actually click on these bubbles to show how the capacity of each unit. And again, there should be equity focus areas on this map as well. Okay, so last but not least is land use. I'll show you land use. There's some pretty cool maps on this page as well. So transportation investment in regional centers and corridors, percentage of total spending, residential building permit activity. We also saw that in economy. Here's a graph for number of permits for missing middle housing, which is represented by the green, 2 to 4 units for missing middle. And then a sidewalk coverage map, which is a little more of an innovative hexagon map. And then these are the last two maps I'll show you. The urban density and transit. So this shows a little more complex. Here's the legend. So you've got transit stops with a quarter mile buffer, light rail lane with a light rail line with a half mile buffer, and then total jobs per square mile by 2010 census tract, as well as population by block group. So there's a lot going on in this map, as well as in this map, which is transportation investments in regional centers and corridors. You can see all the RTP projects by mode and type of project, as well as the centers and corridor lines, and then the central the design types. I think that's pretty much all the time I have for the tour, so I can open it up for questions.
I have a question, if I may. Some years ago, there was the Equity Atlas, and last I heard it was owned by 1,000 Friends. What's the current situation
with that? It's defunct. It is defunct. EcoTrust and I believe the Coalition of Communities of Color were the ones that responded to the RFP when Coalition for a Livable Future put it up.
Yep.
And they put some effort into designing maybe a new process, and it became more than what EcoTrust, I believe, was had the capacity to do, or that it was beyond the scope of what they were intending to
but
do.
The information that had been there, were we able to pull that out and sort of use it in this? I mean, is it information that's been archived in some way, or information that's useful that you could build some of your information on? I mean,
I think that data is pretty old. I think it's about 10
years. Yeah, what I was going to say is that data was kind of a moment in time, and that time has passed. And so I would say that quite a bit of the data that now Research Center and the Barometer have are sort of the updated information on racial equity and demographics that reflect many of the same things we were trying to capture, but in an updated format.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Just to follow up, though, I mean, it's useful sometimes to have information about points in the past as well. I was just wondering if that was useful in some way. I kind of I'd like you to tell me that maybe that it was, because well, I mean,
we didn't use it. I think it. I don't know if it's even available at this point.
I mean, a lot of that was based on Research Center's data and model in the first place, and like that model has been developed and evolved. And so I actually really like the idea of change over time, and I think there are a few places where you guys have sort of changed it over time, but the original source data is something that Metro can work with and has evolved. And Jeff, I don't know if you want to speak about sort of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, we do, as I said earlier, really want this to show a time history. And so you saw many of the charts that we're going back as many years as we have data. So when we have reliable data, we're showing the historic data in the charts that are available on this site. And some of the underlying stuff that was in the Equity Atlas is here. It's in a different form, and some of it is not.
Yeah,
frankly.
Okay.
But the idea was to, as Carrie illustrated, is to look at the equity dimensions of all of the other major desired outcomes.
Yeah. And then finally, just a little shout out. I think that was something of a pioneering effort, and in the early years, I helped, and there were others who helped fund that effort, and so it's something that meant a lot to me at one point in time, and then it's just kind of it sort of died.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was hoping to hear is that some of the information is still useful in terms of past references and past baselines to tell you something about what's happened and changed since then. I don't know.
Here's what I would say is that laid the groundwork for this work, right? Okay. That was sort of the first iteration in the age of data and information where we didn't have the same level of sophistication and tools.
Yeah.
You guys kind of pioneered a way of looking at information. And, I mean, I think the Barometer now is sort of like using some of the more state-of-the-art tools and some of our more advanced access to information that we didn't even have. But I would say that this really does stand on the shoulders of that work. That was kind of the 1.0, and there's been so much evolution ever since then.
Yeah.
I called out in my introductory remarks that we are sustaining this over the long term, and We just had a meeting earlier this afternoon about the fact that we have to plan for that, and we very much view this as a dynamic thing. We're going to learn from this March 31st deployment, and we are going to adapt to what we learn. Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad Metro is doing this, because ultimately I think one of the lessons learned is that really that kind of information and data and atlas, if you want to think of it that way, really needs to be housed in a place that has ongoing sustainable funding to, you know, to maintain.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, yeah. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Mark.
As a nerd who's still in a data analysis software company, I look forward to the hours of productivity. Can you talk a little bit about how you vetted the data to ensure accuracy and maybe vetted sources to ensure that they were an accurate source of information?
I might need to refer to my data expert, Beau Capazzilli, here, but I can tell you a lot of it is Metro data already, and then we are working with state agencies, so it's not, we're not using data that...
Private agency data?
I don't think so.
And all the sourcing is available on the site, so you'll see citations clearly of what the data sources are.
Did you have something, Beau? Okay.
Teresa.
So this really isn't a question, but it's an add-on to what you said about the fellow from Portland State that came. And actually, you said he wrote an article, but he came to MPAC, and some of you may have heard him. Most astounding presentation, and I pass on to anybody that will listen to me, about how he said that... Though we don't have redlining, supposedly, explicitly now, but the population that lived in the redlined areas still sort of live in the redlined areas, and they didn't have the trees, and the trees outside of there were where the affluent people lived. So the part that I found mind-blowing was he had the 10 cities who still had this effect, or the 10 that were the top 10. And in Atlanta, which was the 10th worst, the people that lived within the redlined areas and the people that lived in the affluent areas, there was 1 degree difference. Portland was the worst, and it was 7 degrees. I just went out and bought his book. Make sure that I... And, of course, you can see how that spreads. I mean, you mentioned before, this is the third time I've heard your spiel on this. You said that you give the data and the interpretations up to the reviewer. Well, you can see how that particular little scenario also takes you into trees and heat equity, and it isn't just racial. It's people my age who can't stand that kind of heat. And babies that would be affected, and even the multi-layered houses, as you got higher, it was 120 degrees on the fourth floor, to say nothing of asphalt and how we landscape. It was unbelievable, which is my plug for MPAC showing up twice a month.
Thank you for that comment. Many of those redlined areas are in my district, so I have seen that research, and it really is astonishing. Thank you. Kirsten.
Could I yield to Commissioner Smith and then go?
Thank you. So first of all, I work in the GIS IT environment, so I'm well aware of this work and the amount of work that goes into this product, and this is monumental and very impressive, so kudos to Metro for this product. I can only imagine how big of a job that that is. And I'm questioning about the ability to maintain it or the plan going forward, because I know how monumental it would have been to put that together. So I just have a couple of questions. Because it's so big and there's so much there, how do you plan to update the data? Because it is a significant investment from Metro going forward. And then also for our communities who want to use this information, will you, I'm getting into the nerd weeds, sorry, will you provide services so that if you update the data, we can automatically get your updates versus us trying to keep up with knowing when to go back and update our data downloads? So those are my tech questions. And then finally, just as a comment, I'll say I'm really interested in learning from other policymakers around this room of how you or your community might use this tool. There's so much here, it's overwhelming, truthfully. So I look at it, I'm just like, oh, where do I even start? I could spend hours on it, so probably days on it. So, I would love to hear a policy discussion of just some ideas of how other policymakers think that you could use these maps and this data that we could take back to our community, or kind of just brainstorming kind of food for thought. And
Sure. So I heard two questions there, one of which was about sustainability and one of which I would sort of call auto-push, to be jargony for a moment. So the first one is that the Metro Council, when we budgeted for this project, basically gave my department some ongoing staff resources to see to ongoing maintenance. And so we have a certain amount of resources, and we are going to, as we mentioned earlier, refresh the data. Hopefully, as we're sort of thinking like an annual as a default. Some sources may, from the source, not be refreshed that often. So that will vary by the measure that you see. But we are committing ongoing resources. You know, we may discover that we're not refreshing everything in that cycle, but we are committed to, there are resources sort of committed to this. Now, we're all in the public sector, and we're all doing our budgets for next year, so stay tuned for that. But there is a commitment to that. On the second one, I would actually hope that we can engage in the more strategic long-term discussion I mentioned in my introductory remarks about how we connect our systems. I think many of you know that our current regional data product, the Regional Land Information System, affectionately known as ARLIS, is available by, you know, direct connect. So you guys can tunnel directly into our servers and pull that data whenever you want. So we can certainly talk about what to do with these new data sets. My staff and I are to prime the regional discussion around how Metro ramps up its data hub role, are scoping out some of the topics, and clearly interoperability and integration is one of those topics. And frankly, just to put in a plug for it, the idea of sharing resources, I think, is something we really need to get better at least facing the funding issues that we're all facing in the public sector.
I think I've got Kirsten, and then Mayor Truex, and then Commissioner Scott.
Red on, sorry. Yep, thank you. To Commissioner Smith, is kudos. Really, it's so impressive and such a model for the state. I was taken by the limited English proficiency layer and just wondering kind of where that data comes from. It's sort of hard to come by, and I noticed some other school district data, so I wonder. But I want to thank you for making that available. From my perspective, back in practice, it was sort of hard data to get. Metro had provided it before, and we found it very useful to customize outreach and engagement strategies, so thank you.
Thanks. I should just remark that Metro Council and leadership have prioritized work for my department to really get better at equity-related data in general, and so my team have worked with planning staff throughout the building and the region to look at what that might be. That is a little bit of R&D, frankly, but we are exploring new sources and, frankly, are really looking to engage with our community partners as well to get their voices and have them tell us how we should go about this so it works for everyone in the communities.
Thank you.
So look forward. I mean, there will be more discussions about that forthcoming.
Thank you. Could I clarify that is school district information, the limited English proficiency?
Sure. The regional transportation plan, when it was adopted, identified those three areas for equity focus areas, and I'm not sure where the data.
With the base, I think it's schools, it's very powerful, very hard to get. Thank you.
We can get back to you on that.
That's okay. I suspect it is, but certainly would love a response. It's a model, really. It's very good work. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Rex.
Not being the sharpest knife in the drawer, but in reply to Commissioner Smith's question about what this might be used for at the local level, I would think that the partnering that we would be doing with the City of Cornelius and the Forest Grove School District would be one of the major things. For example, this map here, making sure that we get gaps in sidewalks, safe routes to school, would be prime in the equity discussion. There are areas in Forest Grove and Cornelius and in the unincorporated areas around Washington County, Western Washington County, that are crying for that kind of coordination. Maybe we can make those dollars go further if we combine the two cities and whatever federal funding or state funding school district could come up with. And then when I look through the equity listing that's in the handout, and I look at equity and I see communities, food insecurity being one of those things that goes across boundaries. People who are hungry don't care whether they're hungry in Cornelius or Forest Grove or East Jesus, Texas. They're hungry. And we need to find a way to make sure that those kids going to school are not hungry, because being a former school teacher, I do know that when a student's hungry, parsing sentences is not an important thing in their life. Mm-hmm. So we need to take care of Maslow's basic needs before we move to self-actualization. So, end of rambling.
Thank you. Commissioner Scotton.
I did something, and a group of us, this isn't kind of basic, I suppose, but when we had the Equity Atlas come out back in the early 2003 or 4, the data I thought was still good enough. It was the best we had when the talk in the Park and Rec District was looking at a 2008 bond measure and was looking for support to pass the measure. That they talked to me, and I said, well, one of the things we need to do is we need to do more. Take a look at this information here about equity as far as park locations are concerned. For example, the Aloha area was really short in park infrastructure. And I really want to see a list of some of the neighborhood parks and the community parks be located in that part of the park district. And we had to be able to do that. So I think when the time comes for a bond measure, that's the time you have leverage to be able to say, well, I'd like to support this, but I think to do that, you need to do X, Y, and Z based on the data that you would be generating, for example. Mm-hmm. In terms of sustainability, have you been thinking about, I say that from our county's perspective, getting the kind of service that we should just get this for free. It's kind of awkward to say, but that's kind of true, actually. Are you thinking about subscription services and as another way to... I mean, it is important to have a sustainable model of financing. We saw what happened with the Equity Atlas. Great work is done, and then an organization struggles to keep that ongoing updated. And so I personally can't speak for the rest of my board, would prefer to pay some subscription fees to help pay for this, to make sure that it's sustainable, rather than simply at some point Metro saying, well, we just can't continue this.
Be aware that I'm writing that down.
Can we get a match?
Buy-in is important. I mean, we all would have to take more ownership of that if we're actually paying for part of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, and in terms of like consumption, it shouldn't all just be free.
I'm seeing Metro nod their heads.
I think I would remark, aside from the fact that I'm writing that down, in response to Councillor Smith's remarks about the long-term strategic conversation about how we actually share the data, part of that actually is resourcing as well. When I mentioned like pooled funding strategies, I literally meant, how are we going to sustain this as a collective? A lot of the data that we get comes from cities and counties. Other comes from federal sources. Other, we do a little primary development ourselves. So I think there's a collective enterprise discussion to be had. It's about how we share the data, but also about how we sustain the systems and the data over time.
If I could just say, I think one of the things that Jeff struggles with a lot is sort of the changing world of data and information accessibility in this age of Google, where so many private sector companies have so much information that they are monetizing and potentially doing other things with.
Exactly.
And so sort of what is the role of the public sector in that private sector information data space, and sort of how do you stay competitive and nimble and respond with a financial model and a business model that competes with those? And so much of that is either expensive now because Google owns it and we have to sort of insert our public policy point of view, or we have to do a model that you're talking about, or Jeff is talking about, which is building a public sector focused system that emphasizes the public policy goals we want to see rather than companies making money off of our data. So I think you're actually raising a key point that Jeff is wrestling with, and how we're sort of looking at this project going forward.
And then just to pile on to that a little bit, there are policy dimensions to this that Alyssa and her staff and our government affairs staff are grappling with. You look at what does the public sector do about the fact that, you know, we're all carrying around these little things that monitor us all the time now, and that data is in the hands of the private sector. Do we get access to that? I mean, so there are policy implications as well that we're coordinating with the planning staff on. Mm-hmm.
At our C4 Metro meeting last week, we were discussing the RAFA, sort of the wrap-up of the RAFA process, and one of the things that we landed on was thinking about climate and how RAFA funding can be used to maybe promote more active transportation. And, of course, I'm going to react to the slide that you left up in front of us for the duration of the conversation. But I'm looking at this and seeing all of these purple stumps and thinking about that conversation, and I guess I'm just putting out there a hope and desire to have some real support and collaboration with Metro going forward to help ameliorate some of that. And for Clackamas County in particular, we could really use some support in figuring out how to promote active transportation connectivity, both through funding sources and using those appropriately, and maybe prioritizing projects more by standards that will actually say, yes, we want active transportation. And this map is just a really great illustration of how much we have yet to do there, and also it really shows some opportunities. And when you put those other layers in of equity, tree canopy, there's just so many intersections here that I can see that are really valuable. So, I'm excited, like all the other data nerds, for March 31st to roll around here.
Great.
Well, it's very gratifying to hear that you already can see usefulness for it. We talked about that as a guiding principle. And I just want to also add that we, in our earlier discussions today about the project's longevity and sustainability, we're also talking about the fact that we do need to build in feedback loops, and Carrie and her team will be showing as we deploy how to do that and how to engage. But we do really want to hear from you folks, and if you're taking on this task of the next RIFA cycle, is this information useful in some way, or you're doing Commissioner Schutten referred to the bond measure work and support. And so we really want to know what folks are using it for, and if they try to use it, is it working or is it helping or not? So keep us in the loop as you poke at it, please.
Thank you, Chair. I want to recognize Carrie and Jeff. This is amazing. Yeah, I was trying to think about a really sophisticated way to say how I feel about it, but I can really boil it down to this is dope. So I'm serious. I've been thinking about that in my mind. And, I do want to echo what's been mentioned. This has been a very clear council priority for the last year, and I know for some time before that. Definitely, establish kind of new standard of policy benchmarks in terms of the kind of data that we use. And, you know, this kind of data is what has been the foundation of our affordable housing bond, our parks and nature bond, our transportation measure, other work that we've done in this space. And so, you know, I especially have pushed the research department to innovate as hard as possible on the way that we are able to curate and then tell the story around data with racial equity. And a big part of that is open data, and we've had a bit of conversations around that, so I'm really happy to see our commitment to that, and there's definitely that there. But there's also another layer of motivation for continuing to demonstrate data and impact, and it's something that I know that we feel really invested in with the regional investment strategy as Metro takes on not only hundreds of millions but billions of dollars of public investment, and we are public stewards of that. I know we feel a responsibility to tell the story as much as we can, where those dollars are going and where they're making a difference, leading with race. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we want to continue being national leaders in terms of how we communicate that and implement policy. So kind of trying to bring that all together and to try and add a context from a council perspective. And this is just amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if there aren't any other questions, I just want to echo Councillor Gonzalez. This is really dope. And I don't use that word often. So, and also want to piggyback on what Commissioner Smith was saying about finding a way to exchange ideas on how to use it for policy purposes. It seems like something that we could add to an agenda item for later in the year. Once it's gone live March 31st, we've all had a chance to indulge our inner geek and play with it, and then come back and share some of those ideas. I think that could be a really good use of our time. Yeah.
Thank you. I think that would be a great idea. And speaking of our recent Clackamas coordinating meeting, we talked about elevating the conversation of regional connectivity. And I think we could identify through this a whole set of topics that we want to take a dive. Let's just take at least a little dive into what are our priority areas and look at regional connectivity, whether it's parks and trails and environment or transportation and transit. Just pick our top things that we invest some time in, and I think we'll find a lot of benefit at that around our policy and coordinating conversations.
Thank you so much, and it's nice to know that we may push Instagram and Facebook out of people's spare time. Just a little bit, maybe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So for our next agenda item, as I mentioned earlier, and I think as everybody knows, yesterday Metro Council unanimously approved moving a ballot measure, putting a measure on the ballot that would raise revenue for supportive housing services. It would provide about $250 million per year, and include services such as rent assistance, mental health care, addiction services, all of the things that people need in addition to the key to the unit in order to be successful and stable in their unit. I often get asked, is the reason we're not making progress because we don't know what works, or is it because we don't have the revenue? And my answer, after a year of being part of this process and part of the coalition that brought this measure forward, is we actually do know what works. It's housing, it's rent assistance to make the housing affordable if necessary, and it's services to stabilize people. And so that's what this funding would allow us to do. So Councillors Lewis and Gonzalez are here to, I think, share some thoughts and then listen to your questions and feedback. I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Chair. And I know we've been looking to presenting, and it was a bit unfortunate that we canceled the impact session mid-month. But I want to say how much I and the Metro Council appreciate how many people around this table throughout the last few months have really engaged around a permanent supportive housing measure. I know that a few MPAC sessions ago, we did have a presentation from the three counties around the permanent supportive housing report and the status of that in the region. And yes, yesterday we did unanimously refer a measure to the ballot over a 10-year period. And in our talking points put together by staff, they didn't necessarily mention some of the more technical mechanics of it, so I'll mention them briefly. We are proposing two taxes. We refer to two tax requests to the ballot. One is a high-income earners tax on 1% for $125,000 earned on single, $200,000 for joint, and a 1% business income tax on net income for businesses earning a gross $5 million in revenue. My goodness. So that will help us reach the $250 million a year. The way that we got here, and I want to recognize the elephant in the room, And that's that this process was a departure from the typical Metro process of working within our usual process of crafting a measure over a year, months, with several regional engagement opportunities. But I really want to give credit to the Here Together Coalition, and if Councillor Chase was here, he would stress this, that the Here Together Coalition are a group of advocates, of service providers that have championed this issue to bring it to the top of our list of priorities as regional policymakers, that proven solutions exist. And like Chair Jayapal mentioned, we just need the resources to really make a significant difference. And so with the filing deadline for the May ballot, we felt like there was an opportunity to really demonstrate that government could be urgent, could be nimble to respond to a crisis. And that's really what compelled us to take significant action here. You know, I think we all recognize that the number of people who experience homelessness in our region reached the crisis level a long time ago. It wasn't just in 2020. And business as usual is not working for families and individuals who spend their nights outside, in their cars, or sleeping on a friend's couch. And like Mayor Truax mentioned earlier, this is a regional issue, and it really has no boundaries on a city or county line. The Here Together Coalition brought us a framework built on best practices. They engaged with service providers, elected business leaders, showed us that there are proven solutions to the issue. And one of the things that has stuck with me the most throughout this process is that with those proper resources, we really can provide those right services at the right time. And with the ability to do that, to provide someone what they need in that moment can be life-changing, and it can provide this ability for people experiencing homelessness and what they need. You know, having said that, this measure wasn't without a public process. We did have three community forums in February throughout the three counties. I know that I was able to attend the Washington County one, and I know others attended several others. And again, the Here Together Coalition has worked over 14 months to engage folks and really continue to elevate this to the level of importance in the public discussion. You know, it might not have been the perfect or ideal process from what is standard Metro practice, but it really gave us a path forward and something to do about this urgent crisis. And quite frankly, I feel incredibly proud of the work, of the fact that we were able to get to yes, to put something together, to be a national leader, is something that is so important to me. Just to put it into perspective, you know, Los Angeles had a groundbreaking a measure generating $300 million a year to address their homeless crisis that is significantly, you know, exponentially perhaps worse than ours. And what we're proposing to the voters is really an approach that that we want to make a significant dent in this issue, if not completely addressing it. We don't want people growing up in this region, future generations, to think that living in a tent, sleeping outside, is somewhat acceptable in the most prosperous, wealthiest country on the planet. And that is what compelled us. So, Councilman Lewis?
Yeah, so we know that homelessness and houselessness looks different in the core of our region in downtown Portland than it does at the edges. I feel that acutely in Clackamas County in my district, and I'm really proud that we've been able to come up with a measure that meets all kinds of needs and works in the core and at the edges. You know, in particular, the numbers that I've heard lately out of Clackamas County show that, yes, as the commissioner said, we know what works, but we're not going to scale. You know, last night at the State of the City in Oregon City, they pointed to 13 folks who had been housed through one community resource officer. And it's Clackamas County's goal to house homeless veterans through the Veterans Village and then move on to stable housing. They've had 19 folks go through that process. So that's success, but we know we're not meeting the need that's out there. Our estimates are that on any given night, between 5,000 and 12,000 people in the greater Portland region are experiencing homelessness. That's the scale we're talking. And with this measure, we would potentially for the first time have resources that approach the scale of the crisis. We've heard from service providers who say that regional coordination is key to solving the crisis, and that's one of Metro's roles, is to be a convener and a collaborator. So we look forward to scoping out what a regional collaboration on this looks like. And in terms of racial equity, we know that homelessness disproportionately affects communities of color, who make up more than 38% of the Multnomah County homeless population at last count. And this measure takes in tremendous strides to advance racial equity in our region through the approach of the Here Together framework. So thank you to the advocates at Here Together and the three counties and the part of the business community that was able to engage in this process. I'm acutely aware that there are other voices in our community that it's Metro's job to help set the table as we design how this is actually going to get implemented over the coming months, and hope that this table here tonight can help us make sure that we're not leaving voices out for planning towards implementation.
Yeah, and to continue to build on that, the decision to do it in May was recognizing that in order to really stand up a regional program, it would take us several months to develop partnership models, IGAs with our implementing partners. So getting those resources approved that much sooner was important to address the scale of the crisis. And so we recognize that we're going to have 12 to 18 months in ongoing work plan implementation, and this body is going to be so important to continue to do that. So we really want to stress how critical that is to us. So muchas gracias.
Just a couple of things. I mean, one of the criticisms I think we've read in the press is that it was rushed to the ballot. And I want to add some perspective on that to say that the coalition had been working on the framework that was brought to Metro for 2 years. I started back in 2019, but it had been working on the framework, working on gathering the data, figuring out how the revenue was going to be used for a long time before that. So I think that's a little bit of context. And thank you to Metro and Metro staff, really, for pulling together an incredible amount of work and documentation to get us ready to move it forward. Really an incredible effort. Yes.
So I had a question. I knew about this because, of course, Bob Stoll got a hold of me, and there you are. So I had a little bit of time prior to the meeting and was reading the Echo Northwest off their site. And in October of 2018, they wrote about this issue. And at that time, they said that there was about 2,000 people. I didn't look carefully as to where the 2,000 people were, but they said that they thought that the available service providers would be able to take care of the people who needed supportive housing. And then they went off onto, you know, the high rents forcing people into homelessness. And the report was basically more about them. So I do see that in 2020, and it would be fun if I could get a link to that particular report, they're clear up there at 3,000 to 4,900, let's say 5,000. So in the short time, they figured it out that they were off, that A, the supportive housing couldn't be just handled by the present resources, and B, that it was quite a lot higher. Do you guys have any idea why there would be what they learned more to make up for that difference in what they came up with?
I think that the numbers are actually reflective of several different kind of groupings of homelessness. Point in time count is a snapshot in time. It's one night. And then that can be used to project out what the real true need is, particularly because some communities don't show up on the street and are just as housing unstable and are sleeping in double and triple up apartments and on couches and are just less visible. And then the true need also incorporates what we know doesn't technically count as HUD homeless, so HUD doesn't consider them homeless. So that's like, in particular, when you see us cite the school district numbers, those are students who are, you know, not going to the same house every night necessarily to, you know, put their head on the same pillow, but maybe HUD doesn't count them as homeless because they just haven't hit that level of literal street homelessness. So it's less about Echo Northwest having change their numbers and more about kind of the scope of what the real need is, because HUD definition of homeless and street count aren't really it.
Good. Thanks.
I just wanted to mention that all the reports are, Metro now has a supportive housing website that you can go to, and you can get the Echo Northwest report, you can get that Tri-County report that Councilor Gonzalez referred to earlier, mm-hmm. and sort of look a little deeper at the methodology and the rationale behind those numbers.
Yes.
Nothing's getting past us, past you.
No, absolutely not. And to circle back on that, you know, the scope of the measure and the way that we were able to get to the $250 million number was that, one, it helped us to ensure that we would be able to serve the 5,000 or so chronically homeless individuals in the region. And those folks, of course, require much more comprehensive wraparound services based on a housing first model, that we need to get people into housing first, but then we have to help them stay in housing, whether it's mental health care services or job placement. I mean, you name it, right? It's a whole case management model. But then we also have tens of thousands of households in the region that experience homelessness due to just economic reasons. And so sometimes prevention is the most effective investment up front to make sure people stay. So there's a blend of both. And I think that's really an important item that was very convincing from staff that we would do something unheard of in the country in terms of homelessness services.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. I was wondering if the councilors could possibly address, and this may be a little early, two concerns or issues that may come up. One, I'm wondering about Speaker Kotek's housing emergency bill that's currently in the legislative session. I'm wondering, will folks see this as a duplicative ask of money compared to requests happening at the state level and also happening at the local level? Or can you easily say that this is supplemental? So I think that messaging, I'm concerned about that. My other one is, I'm wondering if folks outside of the city of Portland may be challenged, even when I look at the numbers of the homeless, with the idea of saying, well, this is just a way to fund city of Portland's issues. Because I know I hear from folks outside of the city of Portland, when they drive into Portland, they're like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe the problem that I see in Portland. And so I'm just concerned about, I know it's being addressed as a regional issue, but there's a lot of attention on the city of Portland and the numbers are so high. So those are two issues that I could potentially see coming up, and I'm wondering if you've thought about them or thought about how to address one or both of those.
Yeah, so I guess in terms of is this going to be duplicative to anything that the state does, and first, I've lost confidence in the state actually prioritizing our region. I think in order to get much out of that building these days, first priority has to go places not here. So I do think that it's right for us to step up as a region, because the feds aren't saving us, and if the state does do an investment, it's not going to all be centered here, and the priorities are going to be to spread it as thin as possible. That's a personal opinion. That is not a Metro stance. So you can, you know, listen to somebody who can speak on behalf of Metro on that later. That said, I do support the speaker's bill, obviously. I just don't think that it's going to be big enough that our thin slice is going to make the difference. And the reason that we went moonshot for 250 is because if we put resource here and we take the pain of taxation and we don't actually make that visible difference, we're never again going to be able to take that step of saying we need to do more. So we got a moonshot. We got to go all the way and see if we're right here.
Yeah.
The second piece is, the work that has been done in Point in Time and interviewing folks, people don't necessarily move to Portland to be homeless, but people certainly move around our region towards the services. So if I were to become homeless in Westland tomorrow, I would, you know, hopefully still have some friends who'd let me sleep on their couch, but I'd sleep in my Subaru for a night or two, and then the Westland police would tell me to move along. I'd probably go to Oregon City,
and then y'all would tell me to go along, and I ended up in Portland. So despite the fact that there are homeless people in Clackamas County, some of those Clackamas residents do come downtown for services. So I feel pretty strongly that our numbers back us up in Clackamas County, but also it's our responsibility to take care of our residents who are no longer Clackamas citizens.
I guess I'll just say, just a quick follow-up, I think it's going to be a messaging issue.
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily that it's not a regional issue or that there aren't issues in Clackamas County. I mean, it's what I hear about in Oregon City all the time as constituents. So I think there's a messaging piece here of selling this as not a City of Portland bailout or something, short of a nice way of putting it.
And to not double reinforce that kind of local movement, because we want folks in Malala to still get their Malala services, Welch's to get some Welch's services so that people aren't coming into UGB from just outside. I've heard that, and I hear it.
And to add to all of that, the resources raised will stay where they were raised from in proportion to where the revenue comes in. So it's allocated based on the estimate of where them. So I think that will also go to address the question that you're asking.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
It supplements what Commissioner Lewis was saying, that it allows each part of the region to address their population in the way that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, I think this packet was lacking a little bit on implementation, and so or maybe I just missed that piece, but that would be helpful.
And the other thing I'd add in terms of Speaker Kotek's bill, it is not for supportive services. So it is for things like emergency shelter and I think maybe some affordable housing, and I'm looking at Jess to correct me on that, but it's not for the kind of supportive services that this measure would pay for. So.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to mention is I'm going to give a lot of credit to the county chairs because they really hammered out a deal, dollar in, dollar out. You know, every dollar raised in Clackamas County stays in Clackamas County. The dollars raised in Washington County stay in Washington County. And thankfully, you know, the scale of the problem is pretty congruent to that distribution model. So I feel really confident in that.
Commissioner Schrader.
Yeah, I do want to thank everybody for looking into this because obviously it's a real issue regionally. But I want to point a few things out. I'd like to see what kind of a response I get.
We have identified pockets of poverty throughout the county, and obviously that includes houselessness, homelessness. Two of the poverty-stricken areas also are oftentimes rural farm areas with large Hispanic populations. Estacada, Canby, Malala. So we have the data to say that these particular areas are challenged with housing, plus we have equity and diversity issues out there that need to be addressed in rural communities. These rural communities are outside of the metro UGB. And my understanding is the services, the wraparound, is only going to be available within the urban growth boundary. So does that mean that we have to use my county, since over 51% of our folks are in the rural areas, are we going to have to approach the USDA and get other funding streams for those folks? Are we going to have access to dollars from Metro for transportation for those wraparound services? Is that going to be a use that we can have for folks who are outside of, closer into the region? There has been a lot of concern that what we are possibly doing is setting up inequities which how we are addressing this in our county, because there's a real disconnect with
administrative line.
So could somebody help me with the answer to that? And I'm assuming people can access wraparound services from Malala and Estacada and Canby, but can we use it for transportation dollars to move people into the urban area to access those services? I mean, I'm just wondering. I need to know, because it's as much a problem in our rural areas as it is in our areas in the urban area. And I cannot, as a commissioner, just simply look at one piece or section of a 420,000 populated county. So Yeah. So are we restricted in the use of these funds, I guess, in terms of where they can be used?
Commissioner, first I'll say, I mean, this problem is massive, and it impacts almost every major city in the country, major region in the country. So, you know, the Metro measure is a massive step in the right direction to provide desperate resources to people within the Metro District. And I just want to mention that. At the same time, I also recognize that I know that we're going to work as hard as we can with our partners on those IGAs, and it sounds like something that we'll have to work through those details through the administrative rulemaking. But, you know, housing services, I know that we anticipate to tell the voters that dollars raised inside the UGB, we expect to stay inside the UGB. But it is also important to recognize that we are bringing an extra pot of funds for the county to use in addition to its other resources that it can deploy across the county. And we expect those resources that can be spent inside the urban growth boundary to be significant to address the problem within the urban growth boundary and hopefully frees up capacity for other parts of the county as well. I can't speak to the depth of the budget.
Okay, and that's
one
okay.
Technical correction. We're using UGB. It's the Metro Service District.
Yes.
So, yes, the folks who live outside of the UGB but are still Metro taxpayers, absolutely they will see the services in their backyard.
Thank you.
So could you explain that a little further, Christine, when you're saying they're Metro
So there are parts
taxpayers.
Of Metro right. that are not within UGB, and I will point right. to Stafford as an area you're
okay, got it.
Intimately
okay.
familiar with.
Yes. So, but Stafford is, again, not an area of extreme poverty or homelessness like we're dealing with.
No, but if somebody's pitched their tent in the middle of Stafford in 3 years, 2 years, when we have money coming in, we're going to have a service worker able to go talk to them.
I think one key point here is, as Councillor Lewis mentioned earlier, is people who are homeless don't have an address, and so they're not necessarily tied to a specific location or county, and in fact will go to where the services are. And I think one of the opportunities around Metro sort of bringing a regional look at this is to try to think of a way to sort of more efficiently deliver services across the region, so it's not going from Oregon City into Multnomah County to try to get what you want, but recognizing that you might be homeless in all of the places in the region so that you can get access to what you need. And so I actually do think the regional delivery approach will allow us to have a better conversation about how do we work across geographies to serve this massive need that we don't have enough resources to serve.
I think the question that you raise about transportation in particular is one that we can take back, or that the councillors can take back for discussion. I don't remember seeing transportation called out as examples of the services, but that doesn't, I don't think, mean that it couldn't be
used. It might be something that needs to happen because, again, I have to be worried about, I mean, you seem to be defining the region within the Metro boundaries, not the UGB, but Clackamas County in total is part of the
yeah.
region.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of, to me, where the disconnect is with this. And I'm okay. I mean, we voted certainly to refer this, but I just need to know if, as a commissioner with these other areas, if I have to seek out other mm-hmm. funding mechanisms, and maybe it will free money up or not. I don't know mm-hmm. At this point.
That's
I hope so.
Support Speaker Kotek's bill because that's the money.
Well, we'll see how that goes. Right. And then I have one more last question about who gets taxed and where. It really is folks that live within the Metro boundary that get taxed, or folks that are living out in the outer communities, if they work in the Metro boundary, they will get the tax as well.
Both.
Okay.
So if we want a more elegant response, I'd encourage Andy Shaw, Government
Come
Affairs
on, Andy,
Director.
Let's do that.
Better be good.
Just because, you know.
So on that specific question, the income tax would be assessed of residents of the region as one category of people on their income, and then secondly, of those who earn income in the region. So, for example, if you live in Vancouver, Washington, but work inside the metro area, your income earned inside the metro area, if it's above the threshold, would be taxed.
Okay,
If you the reverse is also true. If you live in the region, work in Vancouver, your income as a resident is also taxed. That's generally how state tax policy works, okay, as well. On the business profits tax, it is income that is earned by the company inside the region, but only those companies, as mm-hmm. Councillor Gonzalez said, that have more than $5 million in gross receipts would actually be assessed the tax. And our estimates are that something like 94% of companies with inside their urban growth or inside the metro district would not be taxed, and something like 90% of residents inside the metro district would not be taxed on the income tax.
Yeah. That was a clear decision from the coalition and from the elected from the leaders that worked on this, mm-hmm. is to make sure that it was not regressive, and that the people paying this would not be, you know, put in a position of potential homelessness. So.
Well, that is a concern, because the other piece of this, how did you decide? I heard two thresholds for high-wage earners. Mm-hmm. One was 100,000, and the other, I'm talking about the single one, that I heard on OPB today that it was 100, but now I hear it's 125, so which is it? I mean, which income tax?
So there's two thresholds. Two thresholds, and because there's two types of tax filers. So it's someone filing a single return for just themselves is 125. That's the threshold at which the tax would begin. And a household that makes $200,000 is the second threshold.
Joint.
Joint, or it's also called household, yes.
But it's,
yes,
it's 200, so it's
200,000.
200,000, yes. And 125,
correct,
for a single wage earner. How did you come up with those figures as being, what are the metrics you used to say that was high wage? Yes, it is a lot of money, but you know, if you're making 200,000 and you have four kids and you're preparing for college, I mean, I guess I'm wondering how did we land on those numbers? Anybody give me the specifics of that, of what that was, what the metrics are, what the criteria, why those were the thresholds?
So there was a lot of discussion in many different tables about the right approach to take. One limiting factor is state law that limits Metro's authority to raise these taxes. Both a business profits tax and a personal income tax in state law, the metro area is limited to a 1% rate. And the goal was to raise the $250 million, right, in order to be able to really bring resources to the scale that were identified in terms of need. And so looking at those factors and trying to make an estimate of what, how do you exempt smaller businesses, how do you exempt households that can't afford the burden, got us in the range of those, the $5 million revenue threshold for companies and the $125,000 and $200,000.
I'm sorry, is it $5 million or $500,000?
$5 million in gross revenues for a company means that if you're above that amount, means that company would have their net income taxed. So only if you have income as a business are you taxed. If you have a very high volume business that has very little income won't receive much tax.
Okay.
And then those companies under the $5 million threshold will receive no tax.
So that's your threshold of what small business versus large traded sector businesses. So,
correct,
what you're saying is that a business that's making above $5 million is traded sector? Because, or could it also be, I don't know where these thresholds came from to make these kinds of criteria.
So I guess
I don't understand.
Take a stab at saying what Andy was trying to say in a little bit, in a slightly different way. It was an iterative process, Commissioner Schrader. We knew, as others have said, that we needed $250 million to really be able to tackle this. Mm-hmm. And then Echo Northwest really played through a whole range of scenarios with different income levels, different tax rates, marginal versus inclusive,
non-marginal,
and size of business. It wasn't so much on the business side. I don't remember hearing a conversation about traded sector versus not traded sector. It was really a question of how do we fit within all of these parameters that we've got to operate in and come up with a structure. And I'll mention also that on the individual income tax, it's a marginal tax rate. So it's a marginal tax rate, and correct me if I'm wrong, Eddie, but it's a marginal tax rate of 1% on income above that,
yes,
$150.
That, yeah. That part I understood.
Yeah.
It's just like, again, it's happened awfully quickly, but thank you for answering my questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Ed, you've been very patient.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know, is this on?
No.
If not...
You're on, Ed. You're on. You're always on, Ed.
I think there's been a tremendous need for a long time for Metro to do something like this. I applaud your actions. I think it's something which has been badly needed. The need has gotten worse every year. It's obvious. It's out there. My only concern has to do with the revenue base and the way it's structured. Now, I realize the measure is already put together. I'm not suggesting it be changed. I just cannot help thinking of my days back in Illinois. There was a well-known congressman named Wilbur Mills that I'm sure very few of you have heard of. He was the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. And Wilbur's favorite saying was, when a tax is difficult to pass, don't tax you, don't tax me, let's tax that fellow behind the tree. And I'm afraid that's the impression I have of this measure. It's going to be relatively easy to pass because almost every voter who is going to be asked to decide on this has no skin in the game at all. He does not have to worry about paying anything. And that concerns me. I wish the revenue base had been spread so that all of us who pay taxes at any rate would have to pay a small add-on to our taxes. And when you take the add-on that you were planning on charging the very wealthy and you spread it out over the whole tax base, my guess is it would be a relatively small figure. But all of us then would have skin in the game. I also realize it would make it much harder to get this passed. I'm sure if I were sitting in your shoes, I would have done the same thing. It still bothers me, though, just as a matter of principle. And just another comment, a 1% tax on businesses on gross sales does not sound like much. I wonder whether you realize that in the grocery business, as an example, their net earnings are between 2 and 3% of their gross sales. So by charging them 1%, you are actually reducing their net earnings by a good 50% unless they pass this on to their users.
Thank you for those comments. Really appreciate that. Just one note on the business income tax. Although the threshold is $5 million of gross revenues, the tax will be on profits. So it's not 1% on all revenues. It's 1% on net income. Thank you. Commissioner Stanton.
Just briefly, I've seen the polling numbers, and the polling numbers make it pretty clear. And I've seen walking around talking to people in my area. People are well aware of this problem, and they don't just see it as a Portland problem. It's a problem in Fano Creek area, south of me, in the Tigard area. There's lots of homelessness there. I've had people living on the edges in parking lots and parks in Beaverton. A lot of people know Beaverton School District has the highest number of homeless school students. We've had a long-standing problem with veterans out in the Coast Range in the western part of Washington County. I'm just incredibly excited. To be honest, I did not participate very. This is kind of something that kind of went on, largely, certainly out of most of us on the boards. This kind of happened. I can't believe that it did in many ways because we've been working on this, and I think we've made more progress than just simply nibbling on the edges. I've been on the Homeless Policy Advisory Committee for the county for a number of years. We've made some real progress, but we haven't really had the ability to really raise the kind of resources to really provide the wraparound services and the units. So I was incredibly excited a few years ago with the opportunity to work with Metro to see the housing units, and now we're seeing the sort of the accompanying wraparound services. And to have an organization like Here Together do so much of the groundwork and build this coalition, they're obviously going to provide an army of help for us in canvassing and other practical campaign issues. I'm just incredibly happy and excited and very kudos to Metro and all the people who really worked on this. I still can't believe this has all happened in the space of a few months. It almost seems like a miracle to me because these things just never happen in politics, and they have in this case. I will say, too, that in the case of, for example, one of our commissioners, Pam Treese, in her capacity as the West Economic Alliance Executive Director, she worked with our county to bring Phil Mangano to the county about 10 years ago. And that was a, sort of the genesis for us for Housing First. And I think at that point, going forward, the business community really realized that that's the model that works. But until now, we really haven't had the mechanism to really make a tremendous difference here. I just can't believe this has happened. It's just great, and I'm glad that that the majority of our board was able to put together support letters for this, and look forward to all of us working together to make this happen in May. So it's fantastic.
Miraculous and a lot of hard work.
What's that?
Miraculous and a lot of hard work.
Yeah, yeah. Some, I mean, sometimes miracles happen, I guess. Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
Thank you. Mayor Truex.
Yeah. My understanding is that there's going to be something like four oversight committees, one for each county, and then Metro will have their own oversight. And I don't know what those are going to look like, but I would hope that there would be some local elected officials, not at the county level, but at the city level, that would be asked to be a part of that. I think that that's an imperative. And also need to have people from the private sector on those also, that we're missing the boat if we don't do that. To continue Mr. Gronke's history lesson, Wilbur Mills was also the congressman that fell on the fountain in Washington, D.C. during the Watergate era, and he fell into the fountain with his secretary, who was named Fannie Fox. So you can take that, and I'll be here all week on that one. Sometimes you can't make this stuff up. And then, of course, he talked about his days in Illinois, and Everett Dirksen was the silver-tongued senator from Illinois that said, a million here and a million there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. And that, of course, adjusted for inflation. But I guess I just wanted to talk about the moving target that is all this, and I think Commissioner Schrader's point about those areas outside of Metro that are located within the county. And in Washington County, we have cities of North Plains and Banks that also have homeless problems, that also have these issues and have people that need the services. And I, for one, in the spirit of partnership, I'm not going to deny those cities the opportunity to take advantage of this. I may do it under the table or something like that, but those people will come to the services. You can be sure of that. And we have to find a way. We have to find a way to get those services, get those people to those services, so that, again, they can come back, get the training, get the services they need, so they can get a family wage job and become a producing member of society. That, to me, that's one of the cores of sustainability, that economic sustainability is you take that pool of eligible workers, get them trained, and get them to the point where they can produce for society. That, to me, just makes a boatload of sense. My understanding is that it's about 45% of this would go to Multnomah County, mm-hmm. about 33 to Washington, about 27 to Clackamas, mm-hmm. and then 5% off the top to Metro for administration. And I'm okay with that, but I also want to see, again, that partnership extend, that if for some ungodly reason that Washington County doesn't use all 33%, that they have enough courage to say, we have some extra to give to somebody that needs it, and that that money flows across those county lines. I understand that that figure, that breakdown, does not extend to cities within the various counties, that it's going to be countywide. And if it's countywide, I am okay with that. If we don't need what would have been raised by people in Forest Grove and they need to use it in Cornelius or in unincorporated Washington County, I'm okay with that. But I want to see the same kind of brotherhood. I want to see the same kind of sisterhood. I want to see the same kind of reaching across the boundaries that apparently has been mapped out for the counties. I want that across the region.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kuhlhoff.
So everyone knows that Lake Oswego has both reputation and factually is affluent, but we have homeless. And what I thought was really interesting when I was doing some research to testify before Metro, that our homeless, I don't know exactly where they are because they stay out of sight, but I'm assuming they're around Foothills, who knows. But what they do, apparently, is go into Portland to get their services and come back and live in L.O. because it's pretty safe. They're not bugged and apparently are able to survive better that way. So I think that that there are pockets of poverty that are very visible and those that aren't. The question I had, though, was just out of curiosity. It appeared to me that the Portland Business Alliance was on board, and then they went, whoa, and then they came back on board. Do you know what the deal is on that?
Yeah, so the Portland Business Alliance was part of the coalition and had members and, in fact, a former board chair at the table with coalition the entire time. They had a meeting 2 weeks ago at this point where they actually had some discussion about the funding source. They all agreed the premise of we need to do something. New revenue is essential here. We're not going to solve it with the revenues on the table. And it's going to be a tax. So they had that basic understanding. The business community had a few members who said, actually, it would be better for us if we put payroll tax. And so they floated that idea. One, it's not popular, might not pass at the ballot. Two, it's inequitable relative to the taxes that have been considered. So they had to iterate through that with their members. But as soon as they kind of had that stormy moment, they came right back to, this is a need, it's worth paying for. And in particular, they were able to work with us at Metro so that they did get that the small business exemption. And the coalition hadn't cemented on a marginal tax rate, but they were able to say, that's our line in the sand, this is going to be marginal. And Metro said, yep, it's our line in the sand as well. So they were able to get what they needed for the PBA perspective. I understand there are other business folks out there in the world who aren't connected to PBA, but I look to them as a voice of reasonableness.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Mr.
You talked about you're going to, was $125,000 for single, $200,000 for couple. You said for working. What about those that are drawing pensions that either, I mean, I see a head shaking over there. Is it is that for people that are on pension, whether it be work living in the area or draw their pension from within the area? That's
so the distinction
that same
is
amount?
Earned income.
Earned income. So you have to be working. Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Truex, I see you reaching for your card.
Yeah, And I am one of those people that's the two best words in the English language for me are tier one. so I collect on PERS right now. And to me, that's earned income. And if I'm not being, and my wife and I are up against, you know, spoiler alert, up against $200,000. I'm not sure we're quite there yet. But if we were I would assume that we would be part of the solution. And if we're not, I have a moral problem with that. I live in this region too. I take advantage of the services, whether I'm retired or not. And I'm still doing all these things, and I am still impacted by this program. And for me to sit back there, or for people like me to sit back and say, because my income comes from a pension or comes from public employees' retirement system or whatever, or Social Security, if I can afford it, I ought to be a part of that, part of the solution. I may not be part of the problem, but I damn well better be part of the solution. Don't tell my retired friends I said that.
Unfortunately, I believe it's state law that tells us how that definition is applied, particularly to your purse. I hear you, and maybe we can go change state law.
Yeah. Voluntary contributions as well.
We won't be able to change state law until the legislature decides to function. So.
Yep.
That may not happen in the foreseeable future. I'll get off my soapbox.
Great conversation and questions. Any more questions for the counselors? Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. I just want to, again, thank everybody. Yesterday was really a historic moment. I feel like we say that a lot at Metro these days with a lot of the work that we've been doing, especially for Oregon, but you know, Jess Larson and a lot of our Metro staff have and the Here Together Coalition have used this, and we don't say it lightly. You know, this measure will be the single largest investment in homelessness in the history of our state. And I will wager and perhaps hyperbolate to the extent of saying per capita, probably one of the most impressive investments on the West Coast or on the country. So.
You know, as you were saying that, Councilor Gonzalez, I was remember the evening that I testified here at Metro, one of the hearings that you had. Right after that, I went to a town hall that Mayor Wheeler was holding in my district. And to go from a packed room here with people who were supporting this measure to a packed room there of people who were concerned about houselessness really reinforced the fact that this is sort of a convergence of timing. And voters really, this is their number one issue. They want to see not just nibbling around the edges, they want to see significant impact, and this is the measure that will do it for us.
And so, seeing it across all the
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, again, thank you. Exciting day, historic day. I echo Commissioner Scouten's excitement about it. I walked out of here last night feeling like we did something good for our community. So, Mayor Truax, you may have the last word.
No, I don't. If it is, we need around this table, and maybe this is an inappropriate comment, but we need around this table to get behind this, and not only with our voices and not only signing the endorsements when it gets on the ballot, we need to help with our pocketbooks. Because it's going to start with people like us, that if we're interested in it, and if we support it and we can go the entire impact council, whether it's $100 or $1,000 or whatever you want to donate, that says something when you get this kind of majority of people who are involved in the policy and advising on it. When they say, we not only support it verbally, we support it with our hard-earned treasure. That's a statement. That's an honest-to-God statement. I'll be here all week.
Some of us will.
Thank you for that. And I think, seeing no further comment, with that, we're adjourned.